Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have two great guests. First one is Suzanne Bates of Bates Communication. She and her firm has developed an executive presence assessment tool. Do you want your executives to have a better executive presence? Do you know what that means? Let's listen to how Suzanne presents her tool and how to make it better at your organization. Then we're going to be speaking with Lori Parham, and she's from the AARP. This is a replay of her discussion about hiring over 50, what it means, and how to make it happen at your organization. And we're talking today with Suzanne Bates, and she is going to be talking about, well, let's see, as Yahoo Finance put it, announces the first ever research-based tool for assessing executive presence. Suzanne, thank you for being to the show.
Oh, David, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
So tell me about this, you know, this new tool. Tell me about where it came about. Kind of give me the background and history of this, please.
Well, sure. I think anybody who has worked on the people side of business and human resources and talent development knows that this the concept of executive presence comes up a lot in conversation around the table when you're talking about leadership development. But when we would go into organizations to ask, what does that mean? We would often hear the phrase, well, not sure, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah, that's true, isn't
and,
it?
And you know what we? Yeah, exactly. So what we realized after a period of time was that there really isn't, or wasn't, a research-based model for not only talking about executive presence with leaders, but also measuring it and operationalizing it in leadership development. So what we decided to do was engaged in a very extensive research project, and we started by interviewing probably, you know, people like the ones listening to your show today, practicing HR leaders and also business executives. And then we looked at empirical studies and research from across the globe in English language to see if we could understand from the standpoint of psychology, management, and leadership theory, social action theory, even looked at philosophy and ethics. What are the facets or the qualities of leadership that really define executive presence? And what we were able to do is develop a three-dimensional model. And our goal was to take it beyond not only I know it when I see it, but what some of the common definitions of executive presence are, like command of the room or presentation skills, to understand those qualities, those deeper aspects of leadership that make people want to follow, right? That get them excited, that get them aligned around a common purpose, that mobilize that kind of above and beyond action and get engagement going. And so we were able to do that. We developed a model with 15 facets and then an assessment, which is a 360 multi-rater that measures executive presence and gives leaders actionable advice.
When you're talking about an assessment, obviously a lot of times the question comes out, what is the background behind the assessment? In other words, what was the foundational questions, or what were some of the questions that went into this? So if you could give an example maybe of what it is that this assessment really, where it came from, what were the type of questions that you were looking for to figure out what is the right person to really, you know, talk about executive presence, to model executive presence. Where did this come from?
Well, let me begin by saying that we don't believe there's a cookie-cutter model of executive presence. If you think about some of the great leaders in the world, so for example, Fortune magazine just featured the top 50 most powerful leaders in the world, and it was quite a range from Alan Mulally, probably one of the most iconic CEOs of our time, living CEOs of our time, to Pope Francis, to Angela Merkel, right? But so when you think about the qualities of leadership that each of those leaders brings to their organizations, you have the Pope, who has established very quickly a reputation as a humble man, He's authentic in the way he deals with people, right? And these are facets or qualities of leadership that we're measuring in the assessment. When you think of somebody like Angela Merkel, what comes through most clearly, what's most amplified in her quality of leadership, are qualities like composure and restraint. In Germany, they call her Mutti, which means mother, right? So it's that practical wisdom and that kind of measured way of looking at handling a crisis that has allowed her to rise to become probably the de facto leader of the European Union. And then you have Alan Mulally, who brings together this disparate organization at Ford. They were on a pace to lose $17 billion when he takes over. They don't take any TARP money. He brings together all these brands that are operating as silos. So his brand of leadership is a little more, I would call it iterative, communicative. He's bringing people together through interactivity and inclusiveness and being very intentional about how he wants them to work together. And those qualities, intentionality, inclusiveness, and others, are also included in the model. So what we're not saying is there's one way to exude executive presence. What we're saying is that every leader has a DNA fingerprint, kind of who they are as a leader, their strengths, and then areas they can develop. And that all those are amenable to change, which is good, because we can develop these over time. And very often with a facet like integrity is in the model.
Sure.
It isn't so much that a leader may not have integrity. It's that that isn't being seen and felt by the organization. So what we're seeking to measure is a pretty robust and complex set of facets. And we look at each facet a little differently. So there are six different questions in each facet in the assessment, because we want to look at different aspects of confidence or different aspects of integrity or authenticity. So when we set out your original question, I guess, was what questions were we asking? We wanted to understand how do people talk about presence? What are the reasons it matters in the organization? How is it connected to business performance? And then we wanted to look at what was already out there in the theory and the research and the literature that would guide us to understanding and kind of developing a shared view. And we were able to validate that with 10 independent PhD level experts. So they all came together and really agreed that these are the facets that matter in influencing and making an impact on an organization.
Now, you talk about three, if you want to call it, dimensions, right? Character, substance, and style, in terms of the model. Tell me a little bit about each one and maybe why they so well play with each other, and why those three, I guess, would be the question.
Yeah. Well, character. We wanted to look at character because I'm sure many of your listeners are aware that in the scholars out there today, and not to make this too academic, but a lot of them are talking about how character needs to be emerge more as a part of the leadership discussion. And, you know, there are studies out there. There was one survey that found only 21% of people trust leaders to make moral and ethical decisions. 21%. So when you think about that, what a profound effect that has on a leader's ability to align people or mobilize them or, you know, energize them or engage them. I mean, you know, that's a fundamental issue. So character qualities are, as I mentioned, authenticity, integrity, and also concern. So the ability to, connect and demonstrate caring for others. Restraint is another one of those qualities. And then humility, the ability to sort of not believe you're the smartest one in the room, to be able to open up to others' ideas. So we felt character was a critical piece of it. So it's sort of those innermost person-based qualities. The substance piece is, those are those qualities of mature leadership that we develop over time, things like practical wisdom. You know, we just learn from our experiences, or maybe more accurately, by reflection on our experiences. Vision, I mentioned. And then also resonance, our ability to attune or tune in to how others are feeling. And, you know, these are some of the things that maybe early in our careers, if we're, you know, high potential leaders, we're tapped and we're kind of driving forward. And then we learn, perhaps with some bumps and bruises, that we need to take a step back and and tune into others, and maybe have a little more calm and composure in a crisis. So composure is another element of substance. And then style, as I think I mentioned earlier, those are the more iterative qualities like intentionality, inclusiveness. They're the way that we interact with other people and get work done through others. And, you know, those are important too. And appearance is in there. So we aren't walking away from how people tend to talk about executive presence as that, again, that kind of command the room, look the part. But it's really just one of 15 facets of presence that we know through the research really enable a leader to influence.
We're talking with Susan Bates, CEO of Bates Communication. And we're talking about executive presence and this new tool that she has created and her organization has created and how to measure it. Suzanne, tell us about the candidates that best fit to take this assessment. Tell me about what they can expect from the assessment in terms of its results and how they can move forward and really grow with it. This is actually quite very interesting, I think, for people in a senior role who are trying to figure out, do I have the right presence? Are there areas that I can train and develop and know where I'm at this point?
Yes. It's definitely designed to help the leader who is either standing on a larger stage or about to stand on a larger stage. So you might think of course, your executive team, even your CEO, as well as those folks who are in the succession planning for those roles eventually, and for those who are in other very critical roles. I'd say where it's probably less effective is depending on how you define high potential. There's definitely the high potential senior executive. It's very appropriate for when you're talking about maybe MBA students 2 years out of school. They really haven't probably had the opportunity yet to get engaged in activities that would allow people to measure things like practical wisdom or vision. So it tends to work best at the senior levels and in succession planning and in that kind of senior high potential arena. And because it's a multi-rater, we're able to be flexible but look at different groups. So peers, of course, direct reports, but we can also look at other stakeholders. That could be the board of directors. It might be external audiences. There may be others that we can include. So it's pretty flexible that way, and what we found is it's not only been a really accepted and exciting tool for individual leadership development, but it has a lot of implications for leadership team dynamics. So,
tell me about the team aspect, because you do talk about leadership development programs and how this can be part of it, and now we kind of have an understanding of what it does and what it's about. Tell me about how an organization actually brings it in and makes it happen.
Imagine a leadership team that is in in the Tuckman model. They're in the perhaps forming or storming stages, and they're stuck there. They're not working together, not showing up to each other in a way that is fostering trust or goodwill or getting things done or seeing shared opportunities to own and drive the initiatives forward. They're working in silos, you know, that sort of thing. It can be very challenging, even with a very sophisticated senior-level team, to move them beyond that. What we found with the tool, the XPI, is that once they've had the opportunity to get the individual view of who they are, you know, am I showing up as composed in a meeting in a crisis? Am I authentic in my interactions with the rest of the team? Am I aware of my strengths and weaknesses? And am I open to their ideas, you know, under humility? Am I speaking up? Am I providing constructive comments or guidance in areas where it might not be my lane, but I could contribute significantly? So what happens is the individual leaders are getting this feedback, and they're beginning to reflect a lot on how they're showing up to their peers, to the executive team. And then what we can do is we can come in and facilitate a discussion that connects these individual themes, we can map it out. You know, we can do a scattergram, we can do group level themes, and we can talk about how are you guys showing up to the organization? How are you showing up to each other? How do you want to show up? And then we can map that to driving business initiatives. So it's been an amazingly powerful tool in getting leadership teams unstuck and really moving toward becoming a high-performing team.
We're talking with Susan Bates, CEO of Bates Communication. We're talking about their new tool, the XPI, which is a new great executive presence tool. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we'll be right back.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Today we're talking with Susan Bates, CEO of Bates Communication. We're talking about the art and science of executive presence, a new tool, the XPI, that they're using and they're modeling and they're creating great buzz about out there, and you're doing it with Fortune 500 companies. Suzanne, it's great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. It's a very exciting opportunity for us to be able to share it with your listeners, so thank you.
No, it's great. So, you know, one of the things that I know people that may be listening to the show right now are saying, okay, it's a new tool, it's a new assessment, you know, I get it. They're talking about how executive presence, I might have some need here. Could you provide an example of how you went to an organization, how they use this tool, and maybe the success of how they can relate it to them in their organization?
Sure. Well, returning to that leadership team theme for just a moment, I'm fresh off of working with an executive team. And when we took a look at some of the group level challenges they were facing, they were around things like vision, making daunting goals seem realistic and exciting and achievable, or composure, being able to shift into kind of a positive frame of mind, restraint, the way they were dealing with each other, you know, was kind of emotional. Resonance was another thing. So helping each other feel like, wow, we're all part of something bigger and we've got to come together around this. So what happened when we were able to present some of those group level themes? We had already actually seen a shift. It was actually amazing to watch. They had been working together the day before. They'd received their XPI feedback a week prior. And the first thing they talked about was how much the meeting changed even before we arrived to facilitate. So they were more aware. They were noticing that they were perhaps more engaged in each other's conversation about their own areas of responsibility. They were just different in their demeanor with one another, and they were really liking the way that felt. And then when we were able to map it to some of their critical strategic initiatives, in other words, if you're going to launch this new system in the organization, what are you going to have to do, and which of these facets are you going to have to be able to show or amplify to the organization in order to get their buy-in? And that was the real breakthrough for them, was to see how relevant these personal qualities they bring as a leadership team and show to the organization are going to drive the business result. So there's a risk with every leadership team that even if they are aware these things are happening, that they may not be functioning the way they want to, that they're stuck and they're not getting to a performing stage. The risk is that they will, of course, fall back and not keep up, because it's hard work to do that. So, you know, then we continue to work with the leaders, the individual leaders on the team, to help them in their own development. And then, of course, that helps with maintaining that positive team dynamic. So that's an example of a leadership team. In an individual situation, we worked with a business president. Her CEO and the executive team had made a decision because she was a very dynamic, get it done, drive forward kind of a leader. Her business was performing well, and they had decided to put more of their eggs into that basket, and they actually decided they wanted to grow through acquisition. Well, that was a great strategy. The question was whether Jane, as I'll call her, was the right leader to lead that effort because, you know, as a hard-driving person, she often got dinged for leaving bodies in her wake, and
sure,
I'm sure that
sure.
your listeners probably
yeah.
all know leaders just like that, right?
Absolutely.
So they weren't sure. As we grow by acquisition, we've got a lot of other people sitting around the table. Is she going to be the kind of person who's going to be able to engage them, listen to their ideas, appreciate what they're bringing to the table, slow down a little bit to speed up? So she agreed. She wanted the job, and the CEO, while still a little skeptical, did want to invest. So we did the assessment. It opened up a really rich conversation with her. And again, because I believe and we believe that these qualities aren't immutable. They're amenable to change. With the right intervention, people can grow. And you know that. You know, all of your listeners know. You know leaders who have that learning agility, who have the ability to sort of rise to the occasion. And with the right intervention, they can do amazing things. And, you know, somebody like Jane, how sad would it have been if they hadn't had her talents in leading that organization forward? So I think what I noticed first early on, even in the pilot phase when we were piloting it with 20 companies, what leaders were saying to us was, you know, this is really great because it doesn't put me in a box. And not to malign any other assessment, but often I think leaders feel like, well, I'm typed or I'm labeled. And what we're doing is we're just saying, here's the individual fingerprint. Here's, you know, strengths of yours. Here's some areas for development. And you can develop these. And you can amplify these qualities.
Well, it's not like a personality assessment from the standpoint of you are that type of person, whether you're talking about Myers-Briggs or DISC or some of the other things that do that out there. So this is a little bit more based upon the ability of people to change and learn from the assessment. And I like that. I think that's practical. It's realistic. It really helps organizations. It can help individuals. Do you find right now that this is a mix between individuals and companies that are doing this? Or is it someone who maybe wants to grow themselves and goes out and calls you and say, hey, can I take this assessment as I try to learn and grow myself? How are you seeing it being used mostly?
Well, we have executive clients who we already work with in executive coaching programs and in advisory programs. And yes, they're wanting to use the assessment as part of their personal development. A lot of the work is company sponsored. So whether it's to work with a high potential group or work with a leadership team, you know, we're having opportunities, obviously, to come in to those companies and have a conversation about how this can drive the business agenda forward. So in that case, I think it is important to have executive level sponsorship from the top of the organization, you know, and when you have leaders who are feeling a little bit stuck, right, and perhaps they're looking at their team and saying, I'm not sure why it's not working, but it isn't, then, you know, sometimes there's a new intervention can be just what they need to get them unstuck.
Well, sometimes that's what it takes, just something new. So I'm looking at it a different way, right? Just making that happen. And certainly this is a tool that can help you do that. Susan, how did you start in this industry? How did you come up with this this concept, or who did you work with to make this happen?
Well, I took one of the most circuitous routes to leadership development you've ever heard. So I started my career as a television news reporter and anchor. And I worked in several television markets. When I left about 15 years ago, I started doing presentation and media training with senior executives. And it was around that time that executive coaching was becoming a viable and popular way to help leaders develop. So I thought it would be interesting to apply some of the communicative leadership techniques and tools that we were teaching in the context of an executive coaching program for 6 months or a year. So we developed a rather unique lens and approach to executive coaching that emphasized the leader's impact on an organization and their ability to influence and inspire and engage. And I have written three books, Speak Like a CEO, Motivate Like a CEO, and Discover Your CEO Brand. So those were all kind of part of my own journey to understanding communicative transformational leadership. But it wasn't until, as I mentioned, about a year and a half ago that I just got, frankly, a little bit frustrated going into companies and saying, what's executive presence to you? And nobody could really define it. I said, you know, instead of walking away from this, I want to walk toward it. So we brought in Bill Mocco, who is now the architect of our assessment and was instrumental in leading our research. And Bill was is a management psychologist by training, but also worked in big companies and also did executive coaching and led an executive coaching firm for many years. So he had extensive experience in assessment, also succession planning, and also he had worked a lot with companies that are in transition or acquisition. So it was a perfect marriage, if you will, of the legacy work that we've been doing with leaders for many years, and then his background and expertise bringing that research-based kind of scientific model to measuring executive presence. And what it's done is it's just made the work so much more robust and rich as we're able to show a leader the data, right, around, because leadership's a social organization phenomenon, right? So that's why it's a multi-rater. So able to show them a snapshot in time of how they're viewed and give them, again, something that's really actionable that they can do something about.
We've been talking with Susan Bates, CEO of Bates Communication. We've been talking about a great new tool. Certainly, Susan, if somebody wants to get a hold of your organization or go to the website, what is it?
It's Bates, B-A-T-E-S, -communications with an S, .com. So Bates-communications.com.
And certainly after this show, people can go to the HRPowerHour.com and we will have a link directly to her website and to Susan directly. Susan, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. And they're talking about this great new tool, the XPI.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be with you. And of course, I'd welcome any of your listeners' questions after the show. So thank you, David. Appreciate the time.
You're very welcome. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. And today we're talking with Lori Parham, State Director of the AARP. And you may be listening to yourselves out there saying, why do I have the AARP on the HR Power Hour? Because actually they're a great partner in understanding why and how an aging workforce can actually help people. And so that is why you're here today, Lori.
It is.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, I appreciate it. And certainly we've known one another from the WLB radio segments that we do in the morning. And certainly today we're really going to be talking to HR professionals and business leaders about how your organization can help them understand the value of an older workforce.
That's right. You know, a lot of folks think of AARP as the American Association of Retired Persons, and we do have many members who are retired, but we're actually just AARP, the letters, or as some people like to say, the ARP, because we do have a large number of our members who are still working. Between the ages of 50 and 64, even older than that, folks, sometimes they like to continue working. They like to feel productive and like they're contributing. And for others, they don't have a choice but to continue working because they don't have enough for retirement. And so they'll be working as long as they can to be putting money away and paying bills.
So let's take that and let's talk about the fact that your organization can help companies understand how to use workers in an efficient way when they get older. Talk about the part of your organization that does that, why it's important.
Sure. So we really take a multi-pronged approach to the 50-plus worker issue. We do a lot of work communicating with companies about the value of older workers. If you look at the research, it shows that older workers, well, first of all, they have a lot of knowledge and expertise. They're committed, and they also, kind of the basic things you're looking for in an employee, they show up on time, they actually continue to come to work, they're dependable, and they can be great mentors in the workplace to younger workers as well. And so we actually have a best employers program where we work with employers. They can fill out an application and show us how they have policies in place for 50-plus workers. And we've actually awarded our 50 Best Employers Award for people over 50 to some companies right here in Maine. Chimbro Construction has won the award more than once, including this year in 2013, and L.L. Bean has as well. So it's really working with them and then really highlighting companies that have best practices in place, because some people actually already do get it.
You're a national organization. Of course, the show's heard across many different states. Are those awards that companies can get outside of Maine?
Yes. So I love to use the example of a health system in Florida that actually has a program in place for snowbirds so that they guarantee employment to people who come down and spend half the year in Florida. So you've got nurses, physicians who may have retired but wanted to come back to work and they've still got their certifications, or other positions at the hospital where they know they're guaranteed every year when they come back in December, say, that for 6 months they'll have employment. So it is a national program, and I'm really proud that there are companies right here in Maine who have been recognized.
Do you still hear that companies are challenged at times in knowing how to best handle older workers? And I say handle with a quotation around mm-hmm. it, because while they come in with knowledge and experience, there are some challenges sometimes on the tech side, especially. Mm-hmm. They may be not as tech knowledgeable as today's workforce needs. How do you see the partnering with employers to improve this?
That's a great question. And we have heard concerns, and we actually see it even with a new program we have that I'll talk about in a minute, that especially for people over 50 who've been in jobs for a long time, and the boomer generation is more likely to have been in one job than younger generations, maybe not as much so as their parents, the greatest generation. But they did the one thing they did, and they haven't had to keep up with technology as much. So this is an issue. What we're finding is that if organizations embrace a multi-generational approach to the workforce, that there's learning in both directions, and that has been really helpful. But internally, it's not just about bringing people on board. It's also the culture and how you get folks who may not necessarily speak the same language talking with each other. So it really has to be a part of HR policy and thinking and their approach to the entire workforce in a company or organization.
When you're seeing success stories, and we're talking about probably especially mentoring programs that have younger generation and older generation working together for the tech side, as well as the experience on the other side, bringing that down. Can you talk about maybe a success story that you've seen in the marketplace today that, as the listeners listen today, can say, I can relate to that and think about how I could do that in my organization?
Sure. Well, it really comes down to the suite of options that you might offer your employees. And often what's good for an older worker may be good for a younger worker too. But it's so ensuring job training, and so providing through the workforce, whether it's internal opportunities or external opportunities, investing in that kind of training for your staff. It may be the kinds of flexibility, the flexible policies that you put in place that might help an older person who's caring for an aging parent, but might also help a younger person who has caregiving responsibility around kids. Scripps is one one company that has had good success in the multi-generational space. But it really is, it's bringing people on board, providing the range of opportunities, but then having thinking culturally about how people are working together and providing opportunities to bring people together. Maybe you have an employee council where you recruit people across ages, for example, and you could do the same thing beyond age diversity. You could do the same thing with race or gender as well. But really making sure it's not just saying, well, I'm a multi-generational company because I hire young people and older people, but it's also being kind of deliberate about how those folks are working together.
You know, I was looking on your website in terms of the AARP, and you talk a lot about best employers. We talked a little mm-hmm. about that in terms of over 50 and award winners. Are there criterias for that? And can companies, as we're thinking about learning the best ways to deal with older workers and help them, because mm-hmm. we want everybody to be successful. I say it all the time. 99.9% of all employers want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. It's just sometimes they don't know how to do the right thing. So tell us about the new program mm-hmm. and how that they can become award winners in this program.
Sure. So we last year we launched a relationship with LinkedIn called Work Reimagined, and you can go out to workreimagined.org if you are 50 plus and looking for work, and it will point you to companies who have taken a pledge that say we are invested in and we care about and appreciate a 50 plus workforce. So at a time when folks are concerned that they're older and won't be able to get hired, these are companies who say, come to us. And so companies, organizations can actually take the pledge, the Work Reimagined pledge, and then be listed as a company or organization that supports the 50-plus worker. One thing that we're working to do is for a lot of people over 50 who may be less interested or engaged in social media, it's recognizing that the traditional resume, things are very different today.
They sure are.
Wow. So the importance of a site like LinkedIn and getting connected in a different type of way and trying to provide that kind of advice and support to our members who are looking for work. What are some of the things that would fit into the award category that a 50-plus worker is looking for? Flexibility. I mentioned that earlier around issues like caregiving. Telecommuting, the ability to work from away. Sometimes folks may have to make a move to be closer to an aging parent. And of course, it depends on the business and whether it works. Condensed work schedules. So maybe you're splitting caregiving with another sibling, so you really need Fridays to check in on an aging parent. You'd work more hours Monday through Thursday. Companies that are looking at the half-time, so part-time employment, bringing in people. It works so well with the snowbirds going south because you've also got a bigger population in the winter months, so it's a win-win. Phased retirement, so not just having people end on a Friday and be done after 20 years of service, but allow that phased retirement, which helps them bridge to full retirement, but then keeps folks on board who can help as you're bringing and recruiting younger employees. So those are some
These
of
are all
ones.
Great ideas, Lori, and we are talking with Lori Parham, State Director of the AARP here in Maine. Do you find that more and more companies are starting to talk about some of these new processes? I mean, we are an older workforce now, and not just here in Maine, but across the whole country. It is. We've got more in the workforce, even though we have 10,000 supposedly a day retiring, quote-unquote retiring. You know, the reality is that we have more workers that are older in the workplace.
We are seeing greater trends towards flexibility, and we believe it really is going to be the wave of the future. I mean, and technology more and more is allowing us to do this. I'd say for good or for bad, I can work from anywhere. there, you know. And so it's great if I've got to be somewhere. I'm lucky to work for an organization that does provide flexibility for caregiving needs, for example. So when my grandfather was very ill, I was able to get on a plane and take my laptop and work the whole time if I needed to. Of course, it does mean that people can find you anywhere, so it could be hard to unplug. But I think more and more this is the way we're headed, and it's going to be important for companies to continue to get ahead of the curve.
I think it's interesting that the generation who you hear from, that says the younger generation in this particular case, doesn't come in on time, doesn't do their work from 9 to 5, is now some of them needing the flexibility of some of the things they rail about to now make it so that they can do what they need to do in the older age. Isn't
right.
that interesting?
Yeah.
How it's kind of twisted all around in terms of that a little bit.
Right, right.
You know, but hey, that's okay. They're learning. We're all learning on how to make that happen. What are some of the key things that you could say are tips that employers could do to work with your organization to make this smoother for them and get some training and development?
Sure. So first and foremost, I would love to see more Maine organizations sign the Work Reimagined pledge. And you can go out to the site and see, and I'll actually share my email. I'm at lparham, P-A-R-H-A-M, at aarp.org. What I can do, if folks want to contact me, is share a suite of information. So the kind of guidelines for the best employers program, a copy of the pledge so you can actually see what you're pledging to do. It's pretty straightforward. There's nothing binding there. It just says, hey, we value older workers. We'd
sure.
love to have them. And then point them the website, which actually has information for employers as well as people looking for work. We do a lot of work on the resume side, and all of that is aarp.org/work, where you can find a bunch of resources as well.
No, that's great. We're talking with Lauren Parham. She's the state director of the AARP in Maine. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back on News Talk WLOB.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan?
I like bronze, like my tan.
Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group.
Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional.
Call Northern Insurance Group today.
We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking to Lori Parham. She is the state director of the AARP.
I am, and boy, you can get tongue-tied saying that.
You can. I've always said it about, I don't know, 100, 200 times at this point. You would think I have no problem saying it all the time. So, you know what's interesting? One of the things that I know about your organization is you help older people, older workers, in many different areas. We've been talking about the workforce, but a lot of people might say, hey, I want to become an employer myself. I want to open a business. I'm in the second half of my life, third half of my life. I'm in my final job. And certainly at Career Management Associates, we hear this all the time. I'm 58, I'm 59, I'm 60. I just want to work 5-6 more years, but I want to do it on my terms,
right.
my terms.
Right.
And I'm in a position maybe where, you know, I've done well, or I have a little capital or I can have a business plan and go out there and try to think about being a self-employed person. Tell me how the AARP can help with that.
Sure. That's a great question, especially in Maine. People between the ages of 50 and 64 are the largest growing group of entrepreneurs in this state. And many are who we call encore entrepreneurs because they are looking at their what's next. And I mentioned workreimagined.org. It's part of a larger site called Life Reimagined. And it walks you through a set of cards that help you kind of determine what it is you might want to do next for people who are able to make that decision. For others who've lost a job, they've just decided that they're going to go into business for themselves, and they may not know where to begin. So for the last couple of years, we've actually partnered with the Small Business Administration across the country, and we've actually done some events right here in Maine during Encore Entrepreneur Month, which is April. And we'll be working with the SBA again this year, along with Coastal Enterprises, Inc. We've done some work with them through their Women's Business Center. And we've done roundtables, brown bags on a range of issues from technology, web security, to just more of the basics about financing and how you get started. And so if you go out to the work site for AARP, you'll also find links to the work that we're doing with the SBA. And it's also out at the Work Reimagined site. So all of the tools kind of go together. But it really does cover everything from how you start with financing to once you're up and running, and then all of the different kinds of issues you'll need to be prepared for from the technology side, for example, to the hiring side.
Is this usually staffed with volunteers who have done this in the past? Is this kind of like a quote-unquote SCORE, which is another organization out there that helps that? How does that all play together?
So we've actually, one of the events we did included SCORE, too, so thank you for mentioning that. What we do is look for opportunities and interests locally, and we use the Encore Entrepreneur Month because just to raise awareness during that time, although we're willing to talk about the issues kind of any time of year, of course. On our site, we have a mix of resources, some that will be, we do live webinars and live talks with people who do have experience, or we just have different columnists who are writing for us, so you can go to their, to links to their information. So it really depends on what issue you want. We've got resume help if you've got questions about a resume, so it's a real range. Out at Work Reimagined or Life Reimagined, you can also do online chats. There are a lot of resources. So most of what I'm talking about is web or online based.
Do you find that a challenge? I don't mean to interrupt, but do you find that a challenge with some of the older folk who don't have a lot of knowledge on web, online, and based? I mean, is there a partnership somewhere to help bring that together?
Sure. So that's a great question, and it's something I'm keenly aware of here in Maine as state director, because our membership, we have a membership that skews older here. And we also know that we have broadband issues in some places too still. But most of what we have is online. When I get calls from people, and I had one gentleman call me who lost his job unexpectedly and was really not sure where to begin, but was it crazy about the web resources? He came in, and I spent an hour with him and walked him through stuff, and then did a bit of follow-up on email. Now, that's not my full-time job, but it's really nice when I can help people like that. So where we can't help with the one-on-one, and I don't want to sell AARP as a job counselor, what we try to do is provide resources that help people individually as they're going through the process. We would try to link them up with people locally.
Absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. So we've kind of talked a little bit about entrepreneurship. We've kind of talked about aging in the workplace. We've kind of talked about how your organization can help employers and employees in this situation do that. What are some of the other things that AARP does? People may know what they do and some of the help for employers or help for employees. What are some of the things that you think about that really make sense for HR business leaders to know?
Well, there have been some changes federally due to some Supreme Court decisions. There have been some changes federally to age discrimination laws that I'm sure a lot of folks are aware of, but that's an issue we're following very closely. We did a survey last year and found a large number of people in Maine, older workers, feel that they've been victims of age discrimination. And so one of the things we do in trying to educate employers is to really talk about and show the research around the value. But we're also working at the federal level to restore some protections for older workers that were impacted by a Supreme Court decision a couple years ago that really put the entire burden of proving age discrimination on the employee, which can be very difficult to do. So this is just bringing us back to where we were under federal law, because now we're seeing more and more an erosion and more people coming forward with concerns, and they really have no recourse. So we do kind of the education side for employers and employees, and then we also do some advocacy work around age discrimination as well.
So we're seeing an increase in that. Do you think that, I guess my initial question is it because there are more aging workforce, people out there? So the question is that percentage really different, or is it just a percentage of the group as a total?
Well, I think, you know, when you're dealing with a tight economy, that can be a real issue. And so we saw a lot of people over 50 who were laid off during the Great Recession. And unfortunately, when they lose a job, they tend to be out of the workforce for a longer period of time and have a much harder time getting back in. You hear a lot of anecdotes, but again, is it perception? What's really going on? And that's why we think it's just so important to be having the conversations with HR professionals and employers that they shouldn't just look the other way if they see someone who's graying a little. I have a volunteer who he's no longer my volunteer. He had to move to Connecticut because he couldn't, and he was in IT, so it's not like he wasn't in a field that is hiring, but he was ready to dye his hair because he was convinced that the age was the factor, and he had all the experience. He was actually someone who was up to speed on technology, and so it's just something to be aware of. And here in Maine, what I've said, and you've heard me say this before, is that we need to look at recruiting a younger workforce, but we need to look at the value across the spectrum, because we do have a lot of older people here, and they're not going anywhere. So we need a multi-pronged approach, a multi-generational strategy, as it were, when we look at our workforce.
No, I absolutely agree, and I think that what you bring today is a lot of information that employers and employees can really think about, of how they can partner with your organization to either help, learn, develop, and partner to make it work within here, and not only in Maine, but throughout the country in terms of what this works. I really appreciate you being on the show today, but before you go, I have to tell you one quick story, because I think it's important and the audience will appreciate this. So I'm not going to say my age, but I'm just going to say I'm not 50 quite yet, okay? I'm just not 50 quite yet. So I got to say that the other day, and this was a few months ago, I started receiving some wonderful materials from your organization. Now, as an employer, I appreciate those materials, but as a under 50-year-old person, I still have not wrapped my head around being quite 50 yet. So I want to let you know that I looked at the material, I looked at the packet, and I felt very good about the fact that I walked into my office and shredded that material through the shredder, because it's just not till I turn 50 that I'm going to feel good about that.
Well,
so do you forgive me for that?
I forgive you.
Okay.
And I will be at your doorstep when you turn 50.
Oh, I bet you will. No, I appreciate that. And all kidding aside, your group does a great job, great advocacy, great understanding of how it can help employers. And I've heard you speak about that and fully support it. So, Lori, thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
And now the HR tip of the week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group. Licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to northerninsurancegroup.com. With the July 4th holiday quick approaching, has your organization thought about having an outdoor cookout or event to celebrate holidays or just the summer? Are you planning to have a picnic? Are you planning to serve hot dogs, hamburgers, or fun things that people can just go out and chat and have a good time on the summer lawn? Well, the HR tip of the week is plan them out. Don't make them just happen on the spur of the moment. There are many things to think about, from what people are able to eat or what people might be allergic to. There are things to be considered about what individuals might be off on time and how this may affect employee engagement in the organization. So take the time, make it happen, and have a lot of fun doing it. And that's your HR tip of the week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group at northerninsurancegroup.com. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.